From Memphis, Tennessee, that's Mr. Blues himself, Benny Ross Crawford. You know him as Hank Crawford on alto sax with the title track from his 1965 album. No, 69, I'm sorry. Titled Hank Crawford, Mr. Blues. Hank Crawford died in 2009 at the age of 74. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are going to tackle the Democratic debacle, debating the non-debate. As you know, the three remaining Democratic candidates vying for the presidential nomination in 2016 held a third Q&A with the media on Saturday, the so-called debate. You know, I don't like calling it that. I called it the Q&A session or the dog and pony show. But the so-called debate this time was hosted by ABC News and was held at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. It's still the topic of discussion, what happened there during the course of the debate, and I have a sizable chunk to share with you as some of the highlights of that debate, that Q&A session, in which the consensus is today, and since Saturday this has been the consensus, that Hillary Clinton ruled the day. And, of course, I have entirely different opinions about this whole matter. I think these are really a travesty, these things that they're calling debates. They don't even rise to that level. But it is what it is, as I say. So we'll hear a bit of the Q&A session, and we'll kind of muddle through. Just so you know, the moderators were David Muir and Martha Raddatz of ABC, the network. David Muir anchors ABC's World News Tonight with David Muir, and Martha Raddatz is the network's chief global affairs correspondent who, from time to time, reports on World News Tonight and Nightline, among other broadcasts. So let's take a listen to some of the highlights. We'll come back to that and we'll talk a bit about what we heard. But listen very carefully. Some interesting things are being said as you listen.
Live from St. Anselm College in Manchester, New Hampshire, the Democratic debate.
Senator Sanders, you fired a campaign staffer. You have sued the Democratic National Committee. All of this after your campaign acknowledged that some of your staffers, quote, irresponsibly accessed data from another campaign.
Let me give you a little bit of background here. On two occasions, there were breaches in information. 2 months ago, our staff found information on our computers from the Clinton campaign. They went to the DNC quietly. They went to the vendor and said, hey, something is wrong. And that was quietly dealt with. A few days ago, similar incident happened. There was a breach. Information came to our campaign. In this case, our staff did the wrong thing. They looked at that information. We fired that person. We are now doing an independent internal investigation to see who else was involved. But what the DNC did arbitrarily, without discussing it with us, is shut off our access to our own information, crippling our campaign. That is an egregious act. I'm glad that late last night that was resolved.
But you said of your staff that they did the wrong thing.
Absolutely.
So does Secretary Clinton deserve an apology tonight?
Yes, I apologize.
Secretary Clinton, do you accept?
I want to apologize to my supporters. This is not the type of campaign that we run. And if I find anybody else involved in this, they will also be fired.
I very much appreciate that comment, Bernie. It really is important that we go forward on this. Now that I think, you know, we've resolved your data, we've agreed on an independent inquiry, we should move on, because I don't think the American people are all that interested in this. I think they're more interested in what we have to say.
For crying out loud, Our country has been attacked. We have pressing issues involving how we're going to adapt to this changing era of warfare. Our economy, people are working harder and being left behind. You want to know why things don't get done in Washington? Because for the last 24 hours, with those issues being so urgent to people as they tune in tonight, instead, we're listening to the bickering back and forth. And if people want a more high-minded politics and want to move our country forward, go on to martinomalley.com and help my campaign move our country forward.
President Obama has acknowledged that what we saw in San Bernardino was an act of terrorism. Secretary Clinton, how confident should the American people be that there aren't others like that couple right now in the U.S. going undetected? And what would you do as president to find them?
I think there are three things that we have to get right. We have to do the best possible job of sharing intelligence and information. That now includes the internet. And we must work more closely with Muslim American communities. They will be our early warning signal. That's why we need to work with them, not demonize them as the Republicans have been doing.
David, but I do want to go to Senator Sanders. How would you specifically find would-be terrorists who are going undetected?
I think it's a two-pronged issue. Number one, our goal is to crush and destroy ISIS. What is the best way to do it? I do not believe in unilateral American action. I believe in action in which we put together a strong coalition of forces, major powers, and the Muslim nations. One of the heroes who we should recognize in the Middle East is King Abdullah II of Jordan. And Abdullah said something recently very important. He said, yes, international terrorism is by definition an international issue, but it is primarily an issue of the Muslim nations who are fighting for the soul of Islam. We, the Muslims, should lead the effort on the ground. And I believe he is absolutely right.
In the wake of the San Bernardino attack, you all emphasized gun control.
Guns in and of themselves, in my opinion, will not make Americans safer. We lose 33,000 people a year already to gun violence. Arming more people to do what I think is not the appropriate response to terrorism. I think what is creating much deeper, closer relations and, yes, coalitions within our own country. I worry greatly that the rhetoric coming from the Republicans, particularly Donald Trump, is sending a message to Muslims here in the United States and literally around the world that there is some kind of Western plot or even war against Islam. Guns have to be looked at as its own problem.
Senator Sanders, we've seen those long lines of people buying guns. Would you discourage people from buying guns?
I think more than half of the people in my own state of Vermont, my guess here in New Hampshire, are gun owners. That's the right of people. But this is what I do believe. I think we have got to bring together the vast majority of the people who do, in fact, believe in sensible gun safety regulations. Who denies that it is crazy to allow people to own guns who are criminals or are mentally unstable? In my view, we have got to see that weapons designed by the military to kill people are not in the hands of civilians.
Thank you, Senator Sanders. I think we're going to go on.
We want to touch on something
that separates us on this stage, David. Excuse me, no.
Governor,
no,
you know what, we have to abide by the rules here. We'll call on you here shortly, but I do want to pick up on something.
We actually passed comprehensive gun safety legislation. Senator Sanders voted against the Brady Bill. Senator Sanders voted to give immunity to gun dealers. And Senator Sanders voted against even research dollars to look into this public health issue. Secretary Clinton changes her position on this every election year, it seems, having one position in 2000 and then campaigning against President Obama and saying we don't need federal standards. What we need on this issue is not more polls. We need more principle. We need comprehensive gun safety legislation and a ban on combat assault weapons.
Let me stay with gun control.
ISIL training videos are telling lone wolves the easiest way to buy a combat assault weapon in America is at a gun show because of the flip-flopping political approach of Washington that both of my two colleagues on this stage have represented there for the last 40 years. We need common sense.
Let's calm down a little bit, Martin.
Let's tell the truth, Martin.
Let's maybe have some rules here, commentators.
We will.
All right.
And let me just establish that for you, Senator, really quickly. Governor, we are going to call on you tonight. It's very clear you have a lot to say, but please wait until you're called upon. And Senator, he invoked your record,
sure did.
And I'll let you respond.
For a start, We can do all the great speeches we want, but you ain't going to succeed unless there is a consensus.
Right.
In 1988, just to set the record straight, Governor, one candidate said, you know what? I don't think it's a great idea that we sell automatic weapons in this country that are used by the military to kill people very rapidly. I lost that election by 3 percentage points, quite likely for that reason. So please.
I actually agree with Governor O'Malley about the need for common sense gun safety measures, and I applaud his record in Maryland. I just wish he wouldn't misrepresent mine. I have been for the Brady Bill. I have been against assault weapons. We need, and only the three of us will do this. Nobody on the Republican side will even admit there's a problem. And in whatever way the three of us can, we need to move this agenda forward and begin to deal with the gun lobby and the intimidation that they present.
We've now seen the polling done well after his proposed ban on Muslims coming to America. But what would you say to the millions of Americans watching tonight who agree with him? Are they wrong?
Mr. Trump has a great capacity to use bluster and bigotry to inflame people and to make them think there are easy answers to very complex questions.
What you have now is a very dangerous moment in American history. Our people are fearful, they are anxious on a number of levels. And they're looking around them, and they're looking at Washington, and they're saying, the rich are getting much richer, I'm getting poorer. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do for my kids? And somebody like a Trump comes along and says, I know the answers. The answer is that all of the Mexicans, they're criminals and rapists. We got to hate the Mexicans. Those are your enemies. We hate all the Muslims because all of the Muslims are terrorists. We got to hate the Muslims. Understand, he thinks a low minimum wage in America is a good idea. He thinks low wages are a good idea. I believe we stand together to address the real issues facing this country, not allow them to divide us by race or where we come from. Let's create an America that works for all of us, not the handful on top.
Senator, thank you.
Not yet, Governor O'Malley. No, not yet, Governor O'Malley. I'll come to you when we call on you. Thank you very much.
Share that.
You'll be happy. I'll let you talk then. FBI Director James Comey says terrorists can hold secret communications which law enforcement cannot get to even with a court order. You've talked a lot about bringing tech leaders and government officials together, but Apple CEO Tim Cook said removing encryption tools from our products altogether would only hurt law-abiding citizens. So would you force him to give law enforcement a key to encrypted technology by making it law?
I would not want to go to that point. There must be some way. I don't know enough about the technology, Martha, to be able to say what it is. Maybe the back door is the wrong door, and I understand what Apple and others are saying about that. I think there's got to be a way, and I would hope that our tech companies would work with government to figure that out. Otherwise, law enforcement is blind. Blind before, blind during, and unfortunately, in many instances, blind after.
Freedom of worship, freedom of religion, freedom of expression. And we should never be convinced to give up those freedoms in exchange for a promise of greater security, especially from someone as untried and as incompetent as Donald Trump.
Governor Maggie Hassan says we should halt acceptance of Syrian refugees until U.S. authorities can assure the vetting process. Halt Syrian refugees, a pause. Is she wrong?
I want us to have a very tough screening process, but I want that process to go forward.
Now, the sort of genocide and brutality that the victims are suffering, these are not the perpetrators. We need to be the nation whose enduring symbol is the Statue of Liberty, and we need to act like the great country we are according to our values.
Governor, thank you.
All right, David.
Senator Sanders, we're going to move on. We're going to move on.
May I have a chance to respond to this issue?
We're going to move on to the fight against ISIS. You're the one who told us we have to follow these rules and break it off.
Yeah, but the rule includes equal. Got it.
Okay.
All right.
Let's keep going.
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Sanders, you voted to send U.S. ground forces to fight in a coalition to help destroy al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Can you then explain why you don't support sending U.S. combat troops to join a coalition to fight ISIS?
Is the United States of America cannot succeed or be thought of as the policeman of the world. There must be an international coalition, including Russia, a well-coordinated effort. But I agree, as I mentioned a moment ago, with King Abdullah. This is a war for the soul of Islam. The troops on the ground should not be American troops. They should be Muslim troops.
The administration has tried that over and over again. If it doesn't work and this threat is so great, what's your plan B?
My plan is to make it work, to tell Saudi Arabia that instead of going to war in Yemen, they, one of the wealthiest countries on earth, are going to have to go to war against ISIS.
Secretary Clinton, I'd like to go back to that if I could. ISIS doesn't have aircraft. Al-Qaeda doesn't have aircraft. So would you shoot down a Syrian military aircraft or a Russian airplane?
I do not think it would come to that.
But isn't that a decision you should make now?
No, I don't think so. I am advocating...
If you're advocating this?
I am advocating the no-fly zone, both because I think it would help us on the ground to protect Syrians. I'm also advocating it because I think it gives us some leverage in our conversations with Russia.
But I worry too much that Secretary Clinton is too much into regime change. Yes, we could get rid of Assad tomorrow, but that would create another political vacuum that would benefit ISIS. So I think, yeah, regime change is easy. Getting rid of dictators is easy. But before you do that, you got to think about what happens the day after. In terms of Assad, a terrible dictator. But I think in Syria, the primary focus now must be on destroying ISIS and working over the years to get rid of Assad.
But Senator, thank you. That is exactly what I just said and what I just described. You know, with all due respect, Senator, you voted for regime change with respect to Libya. You joined the Senate in voting to get rid of Gaddafi.
May I offer a different generation's perspective on this?
Governor O'Malley?
During the Cold War, we got into a bad habit of always looking to see who was wearing the jersey of the communists and who was wearing the U.S. jersey. I would suggest to you that we need to leave the Cold War behind us, and we need to put together new alliances and new approaches to dealing with this. I mean, I know Secretary Clinton was gleeful when Gaddafi was torn apart. We have a role to play in this world, but we need to leave the Cold War and that sort of antiquated thinking behind.
You've all said you would raise the minimum wage, but Senator Sanders, what else? Speak to that household tonight. 20 years, just a 2% raise. How, as president, would you get them a raise right away?
First statement we make is we tell the billionaire class they cannot have it all. You raise the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour, over the next several years. Next thing we do, pay equity for women workers. Women should not be making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. We rebuild our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our rail system. We create 13 million jobs with a $1 trillion investment. That public colleges and universities in America are tuition free.
Secretary Clinton, I did want to ask you, the last time you ran for president, Fortune magazine put you on its cover with the headline, "Business Loves Hillary." I'm curious, 8 years later, should corporate America love Hillary Clinton?
Everybody should. Said, I want to be the president for the struggling, the striving, and the successful.
Very, thank you. Senator Sanders, I want to stay on this. Will corporate America love a President Sanders?
No, I think they won't. The CEOs of large multinationals may like Hillary. They ain't going to like me, and Wall Street is going to like me even less. We've got to reestablish Glass-Steagall. We have got to break the large financial institutions up.
But there is a better way forward than either of those offered by my two opponents here on this stage. We're not going to make wages go up for everyone by either trying to replace American capitalism with socialism, nor will we fix it by submitting to sort of Wall Street-directed crony capitalism. I have demonstrated the ability to have the backbone to take on Wall Street in ways that Secretary Clinton never, ever has. In fact, in the last debate, very shamefully, she tried to hide her cozy relationship with Wall Street big banks by invoking the attacks of 9/11. You still cannot support, as I do, breaking up the big banks and making sure that we pass a modern-day Glass-Steagall.
Governor O'Malley, thank you. I do want to ask you, Secretary Clinton.
Let me respond very quickly. Number one, there are currently two hedge fund billionaires running ads against me here in New Hampshire. They started in Iowa. Now, you'd have to ask yourself, why are they running ads against me And the answer is because they know I will go right after them. Secondly, I think it's important to point out that about 3% of my donations come from people in the finance and investment world. And let me say this. When Governor O'Malley was heading the Democratic Governors Association, he had no trouble at all going to Wall Street to raise money to run campaigns for Democratic governors. And he also had no trouble appointing an investment banker to be in charge of his Consumer Protection Bureau when he was governor. And there is only one person on this stage who voted to take away authority from the SEC and the Commodities Future Trading Commission that they could no longer regulate what are called swaps and derivatives, which actually contributed to the collapse of Lehman Brothers, and that was Senator Sanders. So if we're going to be talking like this, we can, and maybe we can score some political points.
Let me just jump in.
He gets to respond to that.
My name was invoked.
Senator.
So without invocation, let me say a few words. I led, helped lead the effort as a member of the House Financial Committee against Alan Greenspan, against a guy named Bill Clinton, maybe you know him, maybe you don't, who all thought it would be a great idea to merge investor banks and commercial banks and large insurance companies. What a brilliant idea that would be.
Senator Sanders, I want you to respond to what she was saying, but you're instead calling for single-payer health care.
Exactly.
Note people won't have to pay deductibles or premiums, but they will have to pay new taxes.
Yes.
Can you tell us specifically how much people will be expected
roughly,
to pay?
Let me see. We need to pass a Medicare for all single-payer system. It will lower the cost of health care for a middle-class family by thousands of dollars a year.
Senator Sanders, you didn't really tell us specifically how much people will be expected to pay.
Well, it's unfair to say in total.
But you can't tell us a specific number.
I can tell you that adding up the fact that you are not paying any private insurance, businesses are not paying any private insurance, the average middle class family will be saving thousands of dollars a year.
Okay, let's.
But Secretary Clinton is wrong. As you know, because I know you know a lot about health care. You know that the United States per capita pays far and away more than any other country. And it is unfair simply to say how much more the program will cost without making sure that people know we are doing away with the cost of private insurance.
The only thing I can go on, Senator Sanders, is your proposals go and send the health care system to the states. And my analysis is that you are going to have to get more taxes out of middle-class families. I'm the only person on this stage saying no middle-class tax raises this year.
Now this is getting to be fun.
This is fun. This is democracy at work. And Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders, when you hear the FBI director calling it a chill wind blowing through American law enforcement, does that concern you as well?
Well, this whole issue concerns me, and I agree with much of what the secretary and the governor have said. But let's be clear. Police officers should not be shooting unarmed people, predominantly African Americans.
Libya is falling apart. The country is a haven for ISIS and jihadists. You advocated for that 2011 intervention and called it smart power at its best. And yet even President Obama said the U.S. should have done more. How much responsibility do you bear for the chaos that followed elections?
Yes, I recommended and the president decided that we would support the action to protect civilians on the ground. And that led to the overthrow of Gaddafi. But what we're seeing happening in Libya right now is that there has been a fragile agreement to put aside the differences that exist among Libyans themselves to try to dislodge ISIS from Sirte. You know, this is not easy work. We did a lot to help. We did as much as we could because the Libyans themselves had very strong feelings about what they wished to accept. But we're always looking for ways about what more we can do to try to give people a chance to be successful. But I'm not giving up on Libya, and I don't think anybody should. We've been at this
a couple of years. But were mistakes made?
Well, there's always a retrospective to say what mistakes were made. But I know that we offered a lot of help, and I know it was difficult for the Libyans to accept help. What we could have done if they had said yes would have been a lot more than what we were able to have done.
Senator Sanders.
Look, the secretary is right. This is a terribly complicated issue. There are no simple solutions. But where we have a disagreement is that I think if you look at the history of regime changes, the truth is it is relatively easy for a powerful nation like America to overthrow a dictator. But it is very hard to predict the unintended consequences and the turmoil and the instability that follows after you overthrow that dictator. So
I think it's only fair to put on the record, Senator Sanders voted in the Senate for a resolution calling for ending the Gaddafi regime and asking that the UN be brought in, either a congressional vote or a UN Security Council vote. We got a UN Security Council vote. Now,
you have said that Bill Clinton is a great host and loves giving tours, but may opt out of picking flower arrangements if you're elected. Bill Clinton aside, is it time to change the role of a president's spouse?
The role has been defined by each person who's held it. And with respect to my own husband, I am probably still going to pick the flowers and the china for state dinners and stuff like that. But I will certainly turn to him, as prior presidents have, for special missions, for advice, and in particular, how we're going to get the economy working again for everybody, which he knows a little bit about.
A similar line of questioning. Senator Sanders, your wife Jane shares an office in your campaign headquarters in Burlington. We've seen the pictures, the desks right next to each other. Would she have a desk close by in the West Wing?
Given the fact that she's a lot smarter than me, yes, she would.
Governor O'Malley, you have talked about your wife Katie here tonight. She's a district court judge, and the question for you is, would she have to give that up as First Lady?
Katie O'Malley will do whatever Katie O'Malley wants to do, regardless of her husband's success in getting elected president.
Governor O'Malley, she'll like her for that. And it's time for closing statements.
Thank you, good night, and may the force be with you.
Thank you to the candidates tonight. Thank you to the audience here in New Hampshire, here at St. Anselm.
Oh, Lord. It's almost embarrassing to suggest that that is the intellectual capacity of the three individuals who are presenting themselves as Democratic candidates for the 2016 nomination of their party. Bernie Sanders, the senator of Vermont, Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, and Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State and former U.S. Senator from New York and former First Lady. What a mess we have. And that's what's passing for a debate, quote unquote, of the issues. Now, what do you think from what you've heard and perhaps what you have seen, if you managed to torture yourself for the full gamut of debate as they define it on Saturday? Let's deconstruct what we have heard and or witnessed on Saturday. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's hear what you think and what you consider to be one of the most jarring revelations in this short excerpt that we just shared with you. There's something there that I think should cause people to sit up and take notice. Many things did, but one thing in particular, which was exceedingly eye-opening and jarring. 888-874-4888. You see, when these things are done, and they're done in public now, and we've reached a point at which people are just, you know, not watching what they're saying, or because they believe that what they're saying is jiving so well with the electorate that they don't really have to bother with the aggregate view. You know, this they are merely articulating what thousands, if not millions, of Americans are thinking. So they believe themselves to be in one accord with the people, the American people, when they say these things. But I can tell you that if you missed it, it means the formula has worked. If you missed it, and it was huge, it was huge. If you missed it, the formula has worked on you. In the meantime, while I await your calls, I must note, of course, if we have one less candidate in the Republican field, as Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina announced his pulling out of the Republican field in the presidential race, he has quit. So he says that he could not continue for a number of reasons. And I must make this notation because I've talked about it before, but it is really, really important to remind you of the theory I laid out some time ago when I talked about the role of media in completely overhauling this business of elections and how elections are done. What Lindsey Graham was saying today was that he was a victim. He didn't say it that way. But I am saying Lindsey Graham is a victim of the media and just the media's hijacking of this process of public so-called debates. Who qualifies to be on what forum? Who qualifies to sit at the kiddie table? Who qualifies to sit at the grown-up table on the basis of polls and whatnot? This is what has orchestrated the demise of Lindsey Graham. And whatever anyone wants to think about him, and, you know, think about Republicans, we should look at what has happened here. The media have basically conspired to deny an open access, an open process in which anybody of any political stripe should be able to compete for the space which is regulated by the federal government, the space to present ideas. And this is what has happened here. And this is the issue when I was saying to you before how the media decided first to commodify this process. They took it away from the League of Women Voters. They conspired with the political parties to basically run it in order first to make money, but also to control public opinion and control debate. So now we can clearly see, because he said it this morning, we can clearly see how the media have actually imposed their will and are controlling this whole process to the point where a candidate like Lindsey Graham, I mean, I'm not a fan of Lindsey Graham, but I'm talking about a process here that was rigged, fraudulent process. And one could even go so far as to say a conspiracy to deny democracy. And the media is absolutely guilty of it. They did it. And not just with Lindsey Graham, but with all the other candidates who felt they had a viable shot, they made up rules that say, well, you know, you will be allowed to present your ideas to the nation, and we are going to control that process. And the process will involve you scoring particularly at a particular level in national polls. Now, that was the process I was telling you. We have to watch and we see how the media conspired to do that. And they have not even been held accountable for it at all. And this election cycle seems particularly important because the shift is so clear. The power of the media asserting authority denying access and democracy, deciding unilaterally who is to qualify and who is not to qualify on the basis that of rules that they make up in conspiracy, even with the parties, and then also on, at another level on their own. So this is what is important to note. The shift is clear. But let's go back to our Saturday debacle. From South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm great. You know, you made me think about something when you were making your statements and talking. I remember C-SPAN was created as a concession to the cable companies where they had to have free and open news source. They had to show to Congress. And it was very fascinating. It still is kind of interesting, but it was fascinating because you could actually see the votes. It gave the people who could afford cable, you know, access to the Congress. So why is it now that our process that's supposed to be democratic is now commercialized? And if we are having debates on television, you know, everybody doesn't have cable, obviously, but it should be on. It seems like it should be on C-SPAN. And the other part of this is that. Since we all see that, I mean, it's true, what you're saying is true. The system has been hijacked by the corporate media. It's not about who I'm for or who I'm not, but it's just there's so many incongruencies and factual errors. Just the whole thing is crooked because you had thousands of people show up at Bernie Sanders events, and I mean, he doesn't even get near the coverage that is commensurate with the type of, you know, with the number of people that show up to his events, and from what I've seen. So we're in a mess. And I think that maybe this time around for voting, we need to write in. I think not showing up at all is not good at all. We show up, but you can always write in.
See, good show idea. Up, write in. Now, what do you think was significant in the little excerpt that we just heard?
Nothing. You know what's significant? I'm sorry. I don't want to be loud. What was significant to me was I have to give the Democrats, it is so pathetic. They were not as childish as the Republicans. Not nearly. But the problem is still, we're not talking about substantive issues. And until, you know, one of these candidates needs to mention the fact that why are we on a commercial network doing our debate? Why? We've been set up, like you're saying, you know, you've been working on this for 8 months, I think. We are being constantly set up with false choices. Now, see, the Supreme Court, they set a tone, and this, I was about to say a bad word. This person from the Supreme Court last week basically said black people are slow and Scalia basically morphed into something from the pre-Civil War era, and then he got a little older maybe, and then he was hanging around with W.E.B. Du Bois and Carver, you know, their debate. I know I'm kind of digressing up slightly, but I'm coming back. All right. So Scalia basically was, it looked like he was reading Carver's writings where Carver was saying, well, black people need to bring themselves up slowly through agrarian means instead of just immersing themselves into education. Whereas W.E.B. Du Bois was like, no, hell no, forget about that. We just need to learn and we'll be fine. We can assimilate. We'll be fine. So that was a big debate. And it seemed like Scalia was saying, yeah, you know, these universities are too too difficult for black folks. So what I'm saying all this to say, our Supreme Court, by saying that corporations are people, and if you have as much money as you want, that's as much speech as you can get, that means you dominate everything. People have to connect the dots. That means the drug cartel could own our country. The Mexican drug cartels probably have more money than anybody on the planet. It's undocumented money. Nobody knows. So what was the most eventful part of the excerpt that you heard?
Well, there were several different ways of phrasing it, but what it brought to my attention was the number of permutations that all three candidates went through to avoid saying and taking responsibility for the United States assassinating Muammar Gaddafi. According to Mr. O'Malley, Gaddafi's regime was just, quote, torn apart, unquote. We had even the great democratic socialist saying that it's very easy to overthrow a dictator, but we ought to consider the consequences. In other words, there's no objection to getting rid of, as they say, we could get rid of Assad, which is assassination. And as we got rid of Gaddafi, assassination. We had Hillary Clinton talking about ending what happened to Gaddafi. The United States just ended the Gaddafi regime, you see? The overthrow of Gaddafi. All these other ways of explaining the fact that part and parcel of U.S. policy, which they all accept, is assassination. And it should have bothered people. I mean, they're talking very casually about it. The same people who are talking about gun control and the violence and so forth are talking openly about the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi, and Hillary Clinton should have some accountability there. Nobody called her on it. Nobody called her on it. And the other two candidates agreed that this is a problem. Even, as I said, Bernie Sanders talking, it's very easy to take out a dictator. So that's not a problem as he sees it. The thing is, we do need to consider a little bit more the consequences a little bit and plan a little better. But essentially, assassination is okay because dictators are really nasty people. And he could live with that. And this was really fascinating to me, that this is the language of three people who are saying, you know, they offer an alternative, but in fact they all agree that a fundamental approach to U.S. foreign policy, assassination of foreign leaders, is absolutely part and parcel of what should happen there. And people shouldn't be upset about it. In fact, it's part of their platform, if you will, their own particular platforms. Fascinating. Thanks, Khalil, for your call today. From New York, Manny, what are you thinking?
Hey, Trees, good to speak to you.
Thank you.
I think the glaring thing that I heard in this so-called debate was the questions directed towards Hillary regarding Libya, because she shrugged it off as if it was no big deal, of no real consequence. And that was, to me, it right there. Because, as you just got through saying about what happened in Libya, it's this notion about that this country has the prerogative to just cavalierly indicate who it doesn't like and publicly declare that they're going to get rid of whomever. And it's just seen as a casual aspect of the way things are done, and there's no real challenge to that. And for Hillary, with all the devastation that was prompted by what happened in Libya, to just casually shrug it off, it was no real big deal. And that, to me, is emblematic of the kinds of policies that would be become the norm in a Clinton presidency, the second.
And, of course, you note that with the firepower right there, the moderators are supposed to be high-profile news people, experienced journalists,
but
asking the questions. Neither of them raised it. Neither of them asked, well, wait a minute, you were Secretary of State, Sister Hillary. How do you explain this?
and you don't get that at all. I mean, that's not what they're there for. They're not going to challenge the status quo and come with any kind of hard-hitting kind of report that you may have challenged them with if you were one of the moderators. It's not going to happen.
And you know why?
Yes.
The money has not yet begun to flow from Hillary Clinton's campaign. And she is the most moneyed of all of the Democratic candidates. And ABC is not going to do anything at all to make her upset or angry because it wants that the lion's share of those hundreds of billions of dollars that it expects to get during this campaign season, and particularly from Hillary Clinton.
It's the same situation. And that both Hillary and Trump are leading the way they are so in these so-called polls because of the potential windfall coming from the billions they have to spend in the campaign. If Bernie Sanders had a like amount of money that's at Hillary's disposal, he would be leading in the polls. But
absolutely,
it's not going to happen.
Absolutely. Thank you, Manny, for your call today.
And thank you.
Thanks. From Philadelphia, Claire, you're on the air. Hello, Claire. Did we lose you?
Audience, I wanted to say that I'm not watching any of this, but I do listen to comments about it. In my opinion, it is both of these campaigns are just sideshows, as someone said a few days ago, sideshows from the real issue. And I think the real issue is our steady decline into fascism. Every day I hear a specific issue that indicates that. Behind the scenes, bills are being passed, giving away our rights. We're just really, and all of these so-called terrorist attacks or psyops, whatever they are, always to keep us as frightened and distracted as possible. I think we need to focus on the fact that our government is no longer a democracy, and what can we do? We need to take, I think, drastic action. People need to start really hitting the streets, demonstrating. I'm not talking about violence, although the police will turn it into violence. But I'm thinking, as an 81-year-old woman, do I want to live the rest of my life under a Nazi-like regime? I believe that the next president, no matter who it is, will be a dictator. I don't care who it is. It's going to be a dictator. I'm even thinking in these terms. Is Donald Trump maybe the most intelligent? Maybe he'll be more like Mussolini? I'm telling you, this is the way I see it.
A decline into fascism, you say?
Yes. The indications of, well, one of the first ones was that Supreme, one of the most obvious ones was that Supreme Court decision that corporations are people. That took away just about a big chunk of our rights and put it in the hands of the moneyed people.
Did you get any sense at all from the so-called debate of Saturday that the Democrats actually have something to offer that is different, that would to have some degree of comfort?
They're
that
all
maybe
warmongers.
They could
every
do something about it
every,
to help the situation?
Every last one of them. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. You're fine. Go ahead.
Each and every one of them on both sides want war. They're not interested in peace. War is in their interest, not in ours. It doesn't matter what we want. I even look at Trump. I'm telling you, I don't like the man, but I'm trying to be practical and trying to save my life and maybe the lives of many other people. He might be the best person. He at least says, and he's terrible, he at least says he's willing to talk to Putin. He at least says he doesn't like the trade agreement. I'm telling you what he says. None of them will even touch that.
Well, you have given us, Claire, the beginnings of our continued conversation for tomorrow. And we will continue this. We've heard now in relative proximity with each other, the Republicans and the Democrats. And we'll discuss tomorrow whether we find a definitive difference between the two. If so, what might that difference or differences be? And whether we find instead an alarming similarity. And if so, what might that similarity or those similarities be? Thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of our program today. I just thought I would raise this question. We have definitive proof about the role of media here in basically hijacking the democratic process. And we have a clear indication that Camp B is no different from Camp A. And Camp A, hardly discernible from Camp B. So that leaves us between the devil and the deep blue sea, or is there something else that we can do? We'll continue this discussion tomorrow. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for joining me today. Let me know what you're thinking at leadstories@gmail.com. And keep it right here, coming up next, the Global Research News Hour. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.